Okay, we should be live. We should be live. Mike Jones, I sincerely thank you very much for giving your time, spending your much precious time with this such a small channel in the international context. And for that, I'm deeply grateful to you. Much obliged.
Yeah, it's my honor and pleasure. It was good talking to you. You said about 10 months
Yeah, 10
ago.
months
Time
ago, yeah.
flies. Time flies when you're. I was going to say having fun, but that's not quite true. I mean, yeah, maybe enjoy myself, but yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. And 10 months ago, we spoke about. Well, I was mostly curious about the economic impact on Russian society. You were living in
Yeah.
St. Petersburg at the time, and we also spoke about the Buhanka and the possibility of acquiring a Buhanka at that time. You
Yeah.
hadn't bought one. You hadn't.
No, not at that time,
No, at that
no.
time, yeah, we just spoke about,
Gosh.
and it was fun to watch your adventures on the Buhanka, your account of the of those
Yeah, I
adventures.
did a review. Unfortunately, the review was struck for hate speech.
I don't understand. Yeah, you were banned. I want to say this. Mike Jones has been recently banned from YouTube, his
No, not
channel.
just bans. The channel I
Yeah,
operate was
the channel
completely
was
deleted.
deleted. And yeah, hate speech. I don't understand that. It's censorship, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, I had the
that's
NewsGuard article come out in February, and they were irate that I had reposted unbranded copies of RT's documentaries around Donbass spanning years.
yes.
They were very popular. Let's be fair and honest. They were not monetized, as was alleged by NewsGuard. Ironically, it was Google that monetized them or was showing adverts on them.
Yeah.
I personally had the proof and receipts to show that I didn't monetize these. But NewsGuard were irate that I could be possibly profiting at all whatsoever within 24 hours of that article, that February misinformation monitor report, as they called it,
Yeah.
came out. I had a whole swath of videos removed, deleted, struck on my channel, mainly Putin's speeches, Zakharova, Lavrov,
Yeah.
all those live streams completely taken down, of course, alongside the RT documentaries that were so popular. So that it ironically, if you went through that article, every single video they flagged was removed. So it was
Yeah.
very clear link, and it was quite fascinating for me to watch how NewsGuard published it, YouTube reacted, and then Newsweek parroted the same article. So
Okay.
it was really eye-opening to see how the US State Department and their censorship machine works.
Yes.
Through the front company of a fact checker, they were able to lobby a major tech company and censor accordingly.
Yes.
For a while, they played a sort of careful game where they gave me one strike, which was 1 week ban. Then I was approaching the deadline of my previous demonetization. It was like 90 days after one strike. And then it was looking like I could get remonetized. So what they did in May, it was just after Victory Day where I posted my videos in Moscow.
Yeah, I
What they
saw
did is
this.
they hit me with a double whammy. So they smacked me with two strikes, which gave me a 2 week ban. So they just flagged two random videos, one of which I didn't even show any news articles. I was literally just standing on a balcony in St. Petersburg, and I reported on Spain sending Leopard tanks
Yes.
and the capture of Solidar and the deepest church, Orthodox Christian church in the world, in one of the salt mines.
Yeah.
This was again flagged for hate speech, which for me was just showed that there wasn't any hate speech. I
Yeah,
didn't
of course, yeah, of
glorify
course, yeah, of course.
any violence
Yeah,
against
of course.
any groups of people or persons at
No,
all.
I know. I mean, everybody who follows you knows that perfectly. It's
Sure,
absurd,
seriously
yes.
eye-opening, but it fell within 24 hours of this potential where they could not refuse me remonetization. So then I had the strikes, which then wouldn't allow for any revenue. And again, don't get me wrong, I wasn't hung up about monetization, but I could see the panic that
Yeah,
was
yeah.
going on. And then I had this back-to-back ban. So they'd wait until a ban was lifted and then just strike another video. So I ended up with 2 2-week bans, giving me a month off, during which time, in that 24-hour window that the previous ban lifted, John Mark Dugan posted those Mike's gone missing in Bakhmut videos.
Yeah.
I was literally only off the radar for 24 hours. But then I couldn't post any updates on YouTube. All I did was a community post saying, is my ban lifted? ? And a picture of me with a stray dog. And then I was banned again. So then people were like, oh my God, he really is missing. He hasn't posted in ages, like a month now.
We have to suppress.
Well, yeah. And then they were like, oh my God, are you okay? I was deluged with these messages. And then when that, I was like, they wouldn't delete my channel because that's too stupid. That would just, that would show them for who they are. That's just too obvious. Bit like Tucker getting fired from Fox. I was like, that's just dumb in every sense. Like forbidden fruit syndrome.
And
people are just going
to... and they still want to... I'm sorry for interrupting, but Tucker is the best example. They still want to... They don't want to allow him to speak on Twitter like he's doing. They allege like his contract obliged and cannot broadcast on other platforms.
The desperation is so palpable. It's so obvious. Mm-hmm. And it's waking people up. And it's so counterproductive. That's why I was so sure. I was like, then they wouldn't delete my channel because that's just too dumb. Sure enough, when it looked like my bans were going to lift again, they just flagged another video and that was three strikes. And they said, we've removed your channel for too many instances of hate speech. Right. I was like, wow, you've done me a huge favor here. However, you know, a lot of people messaged me saying, oh, commiserations and all this. I was like, no, it's not something to be commiserating about. It's actually an opportunity now where to move forward. Potentially, I can just create a new channel.
Or you can just go to work on RT.
I could go work for RT. There are so many options and opportunities. It's given me paralysis of choice. The truth is, Telegram is my next biggest audience and platform. Telegram's super easy to publish to.
True.
And as I said, monetization or ad revenue wasn't the biggest motivation. The mission statement, though, really on my part, was to reach as many people as possible, which YouTube did facilitate. YouTube's reach is unparalleled.
Yeah,
so that's the temptation to try it some way. When I set up a new channel on YouTube, it actually was quite eye-opening because then I looked at the requirements for monetization and live streaming as well. This is what led to it. Because, again, I didn't want to just fall into the trap of their policies. And interestingly, they had three announcements which spanned from the beginning of the special military operation throughout the year. And a lot of it covered content from Russia. Now, understandably, they demonetized Russian bloggers, Russian YouTubers. But it was actually, when you go through the community guidelines, I then realized, I was like, that's why that video from St. Petersburg got flagged. It wasn't the content that Spain sent leopards or that I was discussing news.
Yeah.
It was the landscape behind, I believe.
Yeah.
That was St. Petersburg. Yeah. That was content from Russia, therefore in breach of their guidelines. Oh, wow. My mind was just...
Russia offers nice landscapes that you cannot show that.
Yeah, no. So I thought, well, if I start another channel where it's not from Russia, it's from my apartment... you know, this scenery could be anywhere in the world.
You blur the background on top of it.
Sure. So. You could, but obviously that balcony scene was unmistakably St. Petersburg.
Yes.
So that's just a theory I've got, which is quite amusing. Maybe I'll play with it. Maybe I won't. I don't know. I don't really want to be on a platform that doesn't want me. And so many people have said, like, just go to Rumble and Odyssey. Truth is, it just doesn't have the reach in the same way that YouTube does. But then again, the other thing I'm mindful of is YouTube's great for growth, but I guess I had 126,000 subscribers. Whilst I don't want to rest on my laurels, of course, I'd like to reach more people. Growth isn't the priority now. So maybe just stick to the people who want to hear the information, because at this point, we've probably gathered the majority of them, not all of them, but the majority of them. So that's kind of my logic and rationale and thought process.
I do agree with you about on YouTube capacity to reach mainly Western
and that that's the key
listeners
thing,
and I think it's important to reach the Western audience. For example, I judge by the small dimension of world where I live in, which is Portugal, And YouTube is the major thing. I mean, Telegram, a lot of people know Telegram already, but you see clearly that the majority of the people, the everyday Portuguese that you run on the street, doesn't know anything.
Same
about
in the
Telegram
UK, from my experience. Telegram was, I only discovered Telegram actually when I came to Russia.
Marginal.
But since then, you get those notifications of so-and-so has joined Telegram.
Yeah.
I've noticed a lot of my contacts from the UK have then started to join Telegram in recent months, years.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's growing, but yeah, I think that's the truth of the matter.
I am surprised that YouTube has not taken down the interview that I have, for example, with Russell Bentley from the Denmark.
Ah, yeah.
Because he clearly speaks. Oh. And says all the forbidden words.
I respect Russell for his unfiltered approach. He really is. He just says it how it is.
Says it how it is. But I guess that's it's because of the dimension of my channel on YouTube. I have backup on Rumble, of course, of everything I do. So
I did as well. And I was very fortunate in that regard.
About sudden shift. About yesterday, are you okay? Are you safe?
you
are in Moscow, right?
Yeah. So, incidentally, I'd just flown back from Chechnya, where I'd been in Grozny doing an amazing press
tour.
It was somewhere I was curious about, but it wasn't on my immediate list of priorities to go to. This opportunity to go and see the Akhmat Special Forces, all these sites, tours and everything. I was like, yeah, we got to do it. So initially I said no, because I had an engagement in St. Petersburg. But then John, who'd arranged that meeting, said, no, let's cancel that meeting in St. Petersburg. Let's get the Grozny. So we did. And I'm so glad we did. It was eye-opening in many different ways. Just to give one example, this is a part of Russia that is predominantly Islamic. Putin talks often, about the multicultural aspect of Russia. But this is one people understand that Russia is predominantly Russian Orthodox Christian. This part is predominantly Islamic. And with that comes no alcohol, no smoking, strict family values, traditions and all this. I didn't hear a single police siren aside from our escort that was taking us around.
In Grozny. Okay.
And we spoke to the police and we said, what about crime? He's like, well, minimal. Yeah. I was like, we didn't hear a siren. He was like, no, you probably won't. There were kids out playing in the main square, riding little electric cars around. It was a beautiful scene of families. Such a sort of brotherly feeling, family feeling. Like these kids are... Biden sort of said that your kids are our kids. No, this is where that actually meant something.
It
wasn't in a perverted way, as I took Biden's to
me. Biden.
It was mean like, there's a kid runs up to you.
Rubs your leg.
I wouldn't expect, there just wasn't that sort of thing. Partly, there's that traditional thing. And we visited areas where they had their traditional dances and things. And this is culture, this is identity, this is history, this is heritage. These are things that Putin has often spoken about. And these are precisely the things that are missing now in the West, where these things have been destroyed and even taboo in some ways.
Yes.
You feel bad about celebrating your particular, ancestry, whatever. But this was on full display, right in your face. And every day, even the customary clothes that they wear, speaks of it, and it was so refreshing to see that, and it was just such an eye-opening experience. I need to get on and edit my video. And get
you have a sense of harmony in the society there.
Sure. Now, again, I'm not saying it's perfect, in any way, but given it's almost the way that we've lived for tens, if not hundreds of thousands of years, they're still on display. Again, that's not to say they're backwards. I was blown away by the investment, the modern infrastructure that's going on, and loads of building. I think Scott Ritter observed the same thing when he went there. He said exactly the same. And I agree with him. There's heavy plant machinery building new roads. There's cranes everywhere building ultra-modern buildings and things like this. It's really, really impressive. I've not seen that level of investment outside of Russia, certainly not in the UK on that scale. So there's a lot of money being poured into there. Then we toured the television channels, and they were talking about their program, where they have heads of the regions. Once a week, they'll come on, answer questions from constituents, you know, people of these areas.
Yes.
And this is a decree by Ramzan Kadyrov, where this has to happen. And these people are responsible for answering these questions and giving factual answers as well. They will be checked.
Not like political correctness.
And... No, yeah, you can't play political games here. If someone says, why don't we have, you know, street cleaners coming around as they should, and that guy doesn't give a good answer, well, there's going to be repercussions. There's going to be investigations. Okay. So there was this level of accountability where, again, journalists and even citizenry holding government representatives to account. Mind blowing. Away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is. I'm. And how was the? So you were there while all of the. I've read somewhere someone called it the longest day yesterday.
Right. No, I just landed in Moscow, and as I landed, there was all this talk kicking off of Prigozhin and Wagner posting this provocation video. And it was all starting to go down. My first instinct was jump in the Bulhanka, head down to Rostov, see to myself. All the roads are blocked off, and it all unfolded.
I was following the whole situation to Telegram channels like Slavyangrad. You probably know that.
Yeah, Slavyangrad's a good one. Yes. That was one I followed. Yeah. The others, I posted on my Telegram channel. Just wait out. Mm-hmm. Wait out and see, because my spidey sense said that a lot was going on here that doesn't meet the eye. There seems to be bigger forces in play going on here. And I think we've seen the acknowledgement of that with the immunity given to Wagner and this measure taken with Prigozhin going to Belarus. That wasn't an outcome one would expect from a unit that had undertaken mutiny or armed rebellion.
No. I was expecting, like, I'm not going to say... you know, those guys pointing rifles at a certain target with the wall behind, something like this.
Yeah, if that's to be believed, and these actions were as described, certainly in Western media, then in ancient Rome, we'd have seen at least decimation, if not crucifixion, of the entire unit. In ancient Rome, we don't live in ancient Rome, but you get the idea what I'm saying when it comes to
the equivalent
discipline.
To that.
Sure, especially with Putin's sort of adamancy about, you know, inevitable punishment and things like this. Now, the key point, again, I made in my Telegram channel was pay attention to Putin's words. He did not mention Prigozhin by name. No. He mentioned Wagner, but in relation to the capture of Solidar and Artyomovsk. And he talked about, you know, the betrayal of those achievements and things like this.
Yeah.
But he did not say Wagner were betraying that. He did not call Wagner traitors explicitly. The insinuation was there. You could read into that if you so chose. But this is where I was a little bit like, again, guys, don't jump to conclusions and assumptions here. Because the net result is we've had massive amounts of military assets moved very close to the borders.
To the border, to the front lines.
Under a justifiable pretext.
I know. I can see where you are getting at, and I've
heard all sorts of rumors. And again, these are rumors and speculation because I don't know, and I'm sure the people that compose these theories don't know. But the other thing was, this was a stress test. What if NATO broke through and marched on Moscow?
Yeah,
what would happen? And the results were possibly that certain people that needed to be ousted, that couldn't be ousted before, can now be ousted on these grounds.
Yeah.
So there can be a cleanup of people that politically it would have been very detrimental or sensitive to do so, including Shoigu.
Yeah.
I don't know that Shoigu would be removed. I know
I read somewhere that he could resign after this.
He could. It's potential.
Also Gerasimov. Sure. And then
maybe Gerasimov.
Okay.
And prior to this, what was Putin going to do? Fire these guys based on social media from Prigozhin? Heck no.
Yeah.
You know, that's not justifiable. Prigozhin doesn't hold that power.
Yeah.
But now, maybe, you know, here are the terms that prevented bloodshed or all this. And on the topic of bloodshed, again, we have to keep in mind smoke and mirrors. I didn't see any dead Russian servicemen or even Wagner servicemen, despite talk of it, despite the talk of shot down
helicopters
and wreckage.
Yeah.
I saw pictures. But again, then how much was stuffing? Because at least one of those was from a year ago.
Yeah.
Was old footage recycled.
Yeah.
We had Ukrainians jump in trying to stir the pot.
Yeah.
We undoubtedly had CIA behind some of this.
Yes.
So this is where I felt there was way too much to going on, where people just needed to hang back and be fine. And as I predicted and suspected, this was over pretty quickly. And there is most certainly more than meets the eye.
And at the same time, you could observe the reaction of the general society, the society in general.
Like, all of this was win-win.
I mean, if you had this mass feeling of unrest in society because of Putin's policies, you could see an uprising.
Yeah, sure.
Being triggered by that.
If people were truly dissatisfied, as the West claims, then sure, this was the perfect opportunity. Yeah. Tobias Elwood, the British member of Parliament, even tweeted out, "Now is the perfect time for Ukraine to capitalize." It is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't happen, did it?
No.
And there wasn't a massive uprising. There was actually quite cordial engagements from what we saw.
Yeah, between, yeah, yeah.
Certainly Rostov and Wagner and all this stuff. So I think this is a big own goal from the West. It was amusing to see them say Wagner terrorists, Wagner freedom fighters, as when it suited them.
Just one line after the other. Terrorists, freedom fighters, terrorists.
But then the US reportedly didn't want to sanction Wagner because they didn't want to support the Russian government, or, it then got absolutely farcical at different times. And that was kind of the key thing. Yeah, I think we just witnessed some political theater and pantomime in that regard. So the net result, though, of all the outcomes was a win for Putin and Russia.
Yes.
Solidification of the society. Some have gone so far to say justification of martial law if needed and full mobilization. I don't know about that. I don't believe full mobilization is required, but sure, maybe a justification could be made for that. Just the net result is it was positive, although confusing and quite disruptive. It shows a level of confidence, if it was engineered and pre-planned, it shows a level of confidence in the society that it could withstand such an event.
True.
Of that nature.
But at the same time, Prigozhin had been known for statements on social media, public statements that were adverse to the Russian, mainly the Ministry of Defense.
He was always
most critic of them, not of Putin, but of the Ministry of Defense.
No, never Putin.
Never Putin. Yeah, yeah.
Never said that. And again, this is why I felt one has to pay a lot of attention to the actual words used by Putin and both Prigozhin. Now, Prigozhin came out with some crazy stuff, but didn't provide any receipts for it, didn't provide any evidence for it.
True.
Now, I see, to my perspective, Wagner fulfilled the role and Prigozhin fulfilled the role that they were assigned, potentially.
True. Yeah.
Hence why there's only a slap of the wrist at best for these guys. The ones that refused to follow Prigozhin's orders offered contracts with the MOD. Let's not forget that it's been claimed, certainly by the Wall Street Journal, that the sort of detonator for this was this decree that all volunteer detachments have to sign contracts with the MOD.
Mm-hmm.
That, Prigozhin was outraged that
I remember Wagner that. Yeah.
And all this. I don't know. I don't know what, because Akhmat signed those same contracts, Kadyrov and all this. That's slightly a different case, but PMC Wagner, was a different case. And that's what they're claiming is the pretext for all of this. I don't necessarily believe all that. Remember, it's beneficial for the Russian government to have this outside entity in the same way it was beneficial for the West to have its private military companies that could operate under certain laws or outside certain legislation.
True.
So I believe that's still the case with the Russians. So again, very difficult times, a lot of fog of war and smoke and mirrors. And
True.
That's when, as I say, the main point, it was confusing. And I think that's the point, it was confusing.
How were the streets of Moscow while all this was fine? Just
absolutely fine.
Normal life going on.
Yeah, absolutely. There were recommendations to not travel, but not decrees that you couldn't. Roads were blocked, like I said, I wanted to shoot down to Rostov to see what I could see. And I was, you could see on Yandex maps, Yandex Navigator, that certain roads were blocked. So there definitely were measures there. And this was utility vehicles. Kamazes were just parked there to block the road. One lane of traffic was still allowing northern traffic, but every car was being checked at the time. This is what I was told. I didn't get to see it for myself. So there were certainly measures. So I can't say that life was completely normal.
Yeah, of course not.
Certainly not on the M4, the M2, and all these other arteries where one could.
But no incidents were registered, right?
No.
Just,
and everything's back to normal.
Yeah, already.
Rostov, everything's pulled out. So which, again, makes me feel this is an exercise/war game. And Wagner, we used to simulate something,
but
perhaps.
It's like it's very Russian, isn't it? Because you could not conceive the West doing this kind of. If it is indeed a war game, and
And the other thing was, it made me laugh.
It's extreme, Lipitz, isn't it?
In Lipitz, they actually dug up the road.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
had heavy machinery literally digging up the road, and then I read a report from the mayor today. He was like, "Yeah, it's no problem to fix that."
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, it's not really. Like, they just get the crews out. They've got the heavy machinery. And in fact, that's great for the contracts and the money. Remember, as Ritter was saying, the city authorities have a surplus of oil and gas rubles that they've been assigned. They don't know how to spend it.
Yeah,
well, I was... just dig up the road for this, take some pictures, and then we'll give some guys a new contract and some work. And hey,
yeah, I was going to ask you to comment on Scott Ritter's declarations about this all this investment, because it is forbidden to be done abroad because of sanctions. It is being done in Russia, and therefore there is a surplus or an abundance of money to invest inside.
I've not spoken to the city authorities to corroborate what Scott claimed he heard them say to him.
Okay.
But I have seen with my own eyes almost everywhere. I went to a screening of a documentary about Daria Dugina before I left for Chechnya, and even around Park Babedi, just scores of cranes, new apartments everywhere, certainly in Moscow. Well, Moscow is one place. But then to see it again in Grozny,
down there,
everywhere I look, there are Kamazes, heavy road building machinery. Then when I go to Donbass, of course, it's the same thing.
You've been to Mariupol, haven't you?
Mariupol, and Mariupol you can understand. But then we're talking about even newer places that have been captured fairly recently. Severodonetsk.
Yeah, Severodonetsk.
That's a bit too close to the front lines, but there's still... a lot of investment going on in the infrastructure. Right. So this is not somewhere that Russia feels is expendable, that they're going to just step back from. Okay. They are most certainly making the investments because this is long term and they do believe it's Russian territory.
Yeah.
Donbass is slightly different. But what I mean to say is in the major cities across Russia, all I see is investment and development of infrastructure.
Right. And it's been historical criticism by the West that Russia doesn't invest in infrastructure. Everything is crumbling and old. And
that was true for Donbass. And that was my first impression when I first went there. I was wow, I've just walked into a Soviet time capsule.
Yeah, yeah.
Clearly, Ukraine didn't. Now, let's be fair to the Kiev regime. For the last sort of since 2014, they haven't had access to that. That forgives the last 8 years. But prior to that, they had every opportunity in the past 30 years to invest in the infrastructure and so forth. And clearly that wasn't done. I've seen those electric trolley buses.
Yeah.
They should be in museums. They're Soviet built and they're still running to this day.
If they run,
they're still running because that's what they're designed to do. They're still running T-34s.
Yes, I was also surprised. I mean, I hope they don't go into combat with those. But
Yeah, that's right. That's why they're running. Yeah, sure. Because Russia's run out.
That's another Western story. Russia running out of equipment and all. I would like you. To ask you about your recent experience in the front lines. But first of all, because the first time we spoke live, we haven't spoken about that. I don't think you had intentions yet. I don't recall exactly now, but When did you like suddenly decide to do this raids to the front line to aid civilians with delivering humanitarian aid? What went through your mind? I mean, what's
Well, yeah, prior
thought
leading up to
process?
about October, November, obviously I was reading a lot of the news, and it was an idea that kept coming to my mind that, I need to get down there and help these people, and whilst helping, see for myself, talk to them, find out what the actual situation is on the ground. And I felt that I couldn't because of wife, kid, family, and that was my first priority and obligation. And in truth, it actually came out not through an argument, but well, maybe it was. I then did a video about how the fifth column that fled after mobilization in September,
The 450,000,
the
half a million,
yeah,
yeah, about.
partial mobilization, many of whom have come back, as has been reported. I said, traitors, the motherland calls. What the hell happens since Stalingrad and that beautiful monument that I've yet to see in person, but Scott Ritter has talked about.
You
So,
haven't been to Volgograd yet? No,
not yet. I'm
no,
saving that one.
okay.
I was going to visit it the other day on the way to get to Rostov as a But yeah, I made this video and I ranted about how if I received the call, I'd sign up, because if this is a society that you do love and wish to protect, then it's something you would do if you receive the summons. At the time, it was just to report to Vojna Kamad. It was just to report to the military office and update your details. Let them know where you're living now, so if needed, you can be called upon. That was all that was being
It
asked. And
wasn't
yet,
like a draft, World War II style.
exactly that. It wasn't like we've seen in Ukraine, where every male between 18 and 59 has to report to be shipped off to the meat grinder. It was not that under any imagination. So the fact that these cowards and traitors, as I call them at the time, got on the first flight to God knows where, Berlin, Turkey, or wherever. I said, that's disgusting. Good riddance to bad trash,
I think I saw
Russian
some of them
society.
in I don't know if it was some of them, but I saw a lot of Russians in Western in Eastern Finland.
Oh,
I was there
cool.
last winter, and I saw a
Ah.
lot of them there. And but it's I've been there before. There were some Russians already, so I will
Oh,
not
sure.
say
Yeah,
it for
in
sure.
those
But
areas,
I
there
could say
will have been
that
a lot of
I thought I
Russians.
saw much more. Not.
Well, I made this video and I ranted and I was very clear on it. And then my wife kind of called me out on it, and she said, "Well, it's all well and good for you as still a British citizen here in
Still,
Russia to
okay.
say that without any chance of you being mobilized." I said, "No, actually, you're right. Yeah, that's a fair point." And people commented the same on YouTube. They're like, "Well, when are you going to be at the front lines?" And it was just when my wife said, "That's all well and good for you to say." I said, "Fine, I'll mobilize myself." She's
Oh,
like, "Wait, what?"
what?
He's like, "Wait, wait, wait, that's not what I was saying." I was like, "I know, but no, you've called my honor into question, and I'm an honorable man. I agree with you as well, actually. You're absolutely right. That is potentially hypocritical of me to sit here in the comfort of St. Petersburg in front of my desk and talk crap about other people who may potentially have to put their lives on the line. Fine. If that's the way you honestly feel, that, if I were to stay, I would be hide. Was it my babushka said? She said, "Respect to you for not hiding behind women's skirts and going there to see for yourself." So her mum supported me, but my wife didn't. She was like, "Wait, wait, wait. No, that's not what I said. No. Yeah, I said, "Well, no, sorry, you've said it now. So I've got to go." And I said, "Well, and on the plus side, I thought, yeah, we could visit some orphanages and, take some Christmas gifts to them because it was around that time of year. But also, yeah, it would help me in what I'm doing. So, yeah, that's what kind of released me, gave
You've
me.
been well, you've been through the test then. Yeah, it was like
Well, at the time,
when
it
they
lifted
called
the
you, when
guilt.
you're
It
you
lifted the guilt that, well, I've got to stay home and look after my family. When she said that, I was like, right, fine, I'm off. I'm going to do this. And it was planned to be about a week or two.
Would
So, you know.
you, if you had the chance to, I'm sure you have, I mean, communications are not cut and all, but when you speak to other people, do you have a lot of questions about people that live in the West? Do you have a lot of questions about is it possible to go to Russia? Is it safe to go to Russia?
Of course.
What do you recommend going to Russia to visit? For
If you're
example,
able to,
for tourism, for example.
Most definitely. And I think this is specifically why the UK and the US have urged citizens not to go to Russia, and why I was deleted off YouTube for showing Russia, is these Western countries do not want people to see that Russia is actually a really good place to be. More disturbingly, it was actually my wife's friend who lives in Norway. She is a well, she's dual citizen actually. She's Russian and Norwegian citizen, married to a Norwegian guy, and she's in teaching. The other week, she was told she cannot work with children anymore in teaching. And it, she, you know, they apologized. They said, "Sorry, there's nothing we can do. This is an order from on high. There's nothing we can say about it." But a parent then also said, "We don't want you working with our children and showing that there are nice Russians."
But okay, blatantly, this is, I don't, I mean, I many words come to my mind now.
Sure. And actually, I'm gonna go full on and say this. And my re initial reaction to my wife was, "Wait, isn't this worse than what the Jews suffered in Germany? Because at least it was limited to Germany, for the main part, as we're taught and understand that the persecution, the horrid, disgusting persecution of those people, was within the German borders at those time. This is worse. This is persecution of peoples across an entire continent. And
Where
it's not just limited to Norway, as I understand. It's across numerous countries. But that level, our children cannot see that there are actually nice Russians. They need to be, essentially what that's saying, and I'm extrapolating, is that all Russians are bad and that there can't be examples of good Russians, nice, genuine Russians.
In this whole story of censorship, I noticed there are countries worse than others in Europe. For example, in Portugal, I see, I mean, the news, it's banging the people's heads all the time about Putin and Russia. But the general feeling towards Russian people, because we have some people from Russia living here, and also Ukrainian, pro-Russian Ukrainians or former Ukrainians, I don't know how to call them now. It's of big tolerance. Fortunately, it is. We don't see any displays. The only display of violence towards a Russian lady that had a store up in the north of Portugal was done by Ukrainians.
Yeah, sadly, I read
Ukrainians
some of those
that
stories.
yeah, and we have some Ukrainians here that had this association organization supposedly to help other Ukrainians that come in, but it's blatantly, openly lobbying to do for the Portuguese authorities. In some instances, we have some episodes to how can I say, to hurt legally or otherwise Russians, or make the life difficult for
Yeah,
Russians in the
make life
territory,
difficult.
or people that do not agree, or even Ukrainians that do not agree with the view. And I've also done a podcast about this with a Ukrainian.
Well, I know firsthand there's lots of Russians that moved to Portugal, gaming companies, for one of them. I know that through personal experience. So, yeah.
Unfortunately, I myself, I'm thinking of visiting Russia, maybe landing in Moscow in the near
Well, I've
future.
partnered with some immigration lawyers. I think it was bit.ly/move to Russia. But I'm also pursuing exploring what state programs and state support exist, because amazingly, through the recent economic forum in St. Petersburg, I caught a guy from either New Zealand or Australia, a farmer who's moved to Siberia, set up an agricultural concern there. And I believe, and this has been confirmed by a Dutch journalist, that there is a program to help the Dutch farmers from the Netherlands. So this is genius. take the payout that the EU is giving you to stop farming.
Yeah.
That's fine. Accept that. Take that capital.
Move to Russia. Yeah. And do your farming here.
And especially when it comes to the Dutch farmers, we know they are extremely savvy when it comes to business.
True,
great businessmen.
Yeah.
Really efficient with their farming. True. They have excellent skills. Well, Russia's got the space, and Russia's not on the same agenda, it appears, of destroying the food chain.
The production infrastructure in general, not only the agriculture, but also industry.
Yeah,
and
across the board. Yeah. Now, there are challenges, of course, to be adapted to, such as climate and the season and the length of it. I know even in St. Petersburg, I was caught out when I was trying to how short that window was. But Russia is such a vast country, and I'm sure that the Dutch farmers are intelligent enough to be able to adapt certain crops and the soil as well, which is going to differ. And again, this is not an area I'm an expert on, but I'm just, spitballing all these various factors. I believe these guys would be welcomed with open arms, and they'd thrive here in Russia. And that's a genius move from my part, my perspective from the Russian government. It's just, when it comes to bureaucracy, often there's challenge. And of course, you've got language barrier as well.
Okay. Have you heard about this e-passport, e-visa, not e-passport, e-visa that Russia, it's about to be implemented in Russia, but only for a group of countries, I think.
Friendly countries.
Friendly.
Yeah, because I read it and I was like, yeah. And of course, the United Kingdom was not on that list. I was like, nah. Yes. Damn you, Rishi Sunak.
I'm hoping that Portugal escapes. Although it's in the unfriendly list, it was added later. Yeah, because I mean, our government had to do what NATO.
Of course, they're under the EU.
And the EU demands they cannot. Is this the Portuguese government?
Of course.
I mean, they have to pretend that at least that they are helping the effort, the war effort.
Yeah,
they sent a couple of leopards out of service.
Yeah. And they're probably destroyed now, so don't worry.
It's true. I don't think they... Well, it's actually worse than that. I don't think they made it to the front lines.
No, as I... these leopards were so far gone.
Yeah.
They would take so much... Even Rheinmetall were like, we need someone to pay for this because we're not going to pay for it. These things are pretty much scrap at this point.
And bad publicity. Bad publicity. Yeah. I mean, those leopards... Oh, there's so much I want to talk about, and I know your time is precious, but I wanted to know, one day I'll go by myself and see, but I'm not doing that yet, so I would like to ask you, how do you, when you talk to Russians on the everyday life society, what are the main subjects, for example, that people discuss at cafes when friends meet? Is politics a subject? Is general culture a subject? Or are people distracted with the same mindless things that we are used in the West?
In Moscow, it's the same mindless things that you're probably used to in the West.
Like
that
TikTok
being said, not TikTok. Heard that. Or even Instagram. If anything, it's the relief that these entities are outside of Russia. Generally, there's the curiosity where I'm from, why I'm here, and all this on a personal level. On a broader scale, I did have one guy when I was out with some friends who overheard the English being spoken, came up, and he was against the special military operation. This was in Moscow, and that was quite refreshing. I was having a good discussion with him, and I was explaining my position on it, which was in polar opposite to his.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able to talk and have a civil adult debate and discussion about it, and agree to disagree.
Do you think he was propagandized by the West?
Quite possibly. And remember that Moscow is so affluent that a lot of that money has come from the West. That even in Grozny, John met, I also met later after John had struck up a conversation, a guy who lived in Miami. And he said, no, the US for me is almost like Shangri-La. It's like, it's heaven. I love the US. That's brilliant. Because, John was saying, well, I wouldn't move back there if I were you, from what I hear. He was like, no, I love it. There we are. And that attitude still remains among a certain level of the population. They still adore the West. They still believe it. It's great. and that's what they still aspire to. But that portion of the population has dramatically decreased.
And so,
in my experience.
And so, and economy-wise, since the last time we spoke, about 10 months ago, do you see like the deepening of a crisis? Because you know Joe Blogs, you know this YouTube channel.
I've not checked in with Joe for a long time.
I've given up. But
yeah, I did as well.
Because I went to
his thumbnail. The predictions were just laughable. Yeah. It was like China economy is going to implode. Russian economy is going to implode. And this was like a year ago now.
But for an ignorant person like me, it looks very credible.
He does his best. But then even if you were just to Google just a couple of points, even in Western sources, you're like, nah, sorry, dude.
I did was revisit the first predictions.
Sure.
And then compare it to the reality now.
So wishful you can thinking.
Say, utter bullshit.
I'm sure he's doing well. I'm sure he's making bank. And all respect to him for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, credibility wise, it's down the gutter, down the pan.
Do you feel a recovery?
There's massive, there's an interesting sort of phenomenon now. So let's focus on the auto industry, because that was one of the first and hardest hit.
And we talked about that.
The Chinese have just swooped in. I think they've now got over a third of the car market, to the point where there was an interesting report that parts for Chinese cars were in high demand, not because of any sanctions or anything, but because they were so popular that demand outstripped supply, because the supply was predominantly on the rail network, from what I read. Interestingly, we traded in our Nissan X-Trail, because when we went to the dealer with the last service, they said, we can't source the Nissan parts. We'll have to find you compatible parts, which were of course from China. And it was like, well, why don't we just buy a Chinese car then? So sure enough, we traded in the X-Trail for a Chery Tiggo 7 Pro Max, and everywhere.
Are you satisfied with it?
Well, me personally, it's too clever. It's got too much gadgets on it. It's great. It is fantastic. It's got all the stuff that you want. I love my Buhanka. She doesn't scream at me if I don't put my seatbelt on.
Yeah.
She doesn't shout at me if, you know, whatever happens. And she'll start when I turn the key. She doesn't need some fob and she doesn't need all this stuff. I love my Buhanka.
But you did have some criticism about the Buhanka in the beginning, I recall.
I absolutely do. I mean, I love to hate her in many regards. And she doesn't like my spine. She really hates my back, especially. But she wasn't designed for the stuff I put her through. So I forgive her for it. And I still love her from the bottom of my heart. And going from a Buhanka to like the spaceship that is the Chery Tiggo 7, it's like... and again, it's an automatic as well. So even going into reverse, I was fiddling with like, oh, the camera's then here and it's bleeping here and it's got blind spot notifications. I just love my Buhanka. I just dip the clutch, whack it in reverse.
That's my dream, Van. I told you that it last time, but it is an inaccessible.
The other thing she hates are my knees. And I didn't realize this. After Donbass, I came back. I was like, oh my God, I'm so old. My knees are killing me.
How tall are you in centimeters?
I think I'm 176.
That's the same as me. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a hobbit. I don't know about you. I'm a hobbit. But then my wife said to me, oh, you realize that back in Soviet times, they had literal health camps for drivers of Soviet cars.
Okay.
Like, what? She said, yeah, these guys needed titanium knee replacements at the age of 40 because the clutches were so heavy and all this. And in Moscow traffic, 7 hours dipping that clutch, my left knee was killing me. Okay. And it's not that I'm a wuss or anything. It's not that I'm a pansy.
So it's like driving, it's like pressing on the clutch of a tank of a T-34.
Oh, yeah. It's really agricultural. That's how I describe it. Yeah, it's not designed for comfort. It's definitely for function. Yes. And she's only meant to go for like a hop off-road in the woods, go for a hunting trip, fishing, whatever. It's not meant for the highway cruising that I do. Although, ironically, on the highway, it's easy because I don't have to dip the clutch all the time.
So
she's not the... she's a 1960s design, of course. And that's what I love about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the same as me. It's the same motive. I love it. It's because they kept the design there.
Pretty much. And I know safety wise, it's night and day between like the modern Chinese cars and the old. Well, I say old, she's brand new.
Yeah.
But the 1960s design, UAZ. Yeah, very different indeed.
When I was in Russia, in the former Finnish territories, back in 2005, that's when I saw the Bohanka for the first time. There were several of them riding them. I was in a town called Sortavala. It's
in the rural places. Yeah, you'll see them in Moscow. I get stopped and people ask me, "How old is that?" It's 2022, and they're like, "What? They still make them?" Because everyone's riding Audis, Porsches, Mercedes, and all the same in Grozny. There were Mercedes and all these German cars, Maybach, Land Rover Defenders. They said in modern places, the Bohanka is a rare sight. Go to Donbass and it's Bohanka land. She's back with her brothers and sisters. Ironically, I thought Bohanka's perfect for Donbass because if it breaks down, there's always going to be someone that can repair it.
Yeah.
Not the case. I think it was the throttle cable went, and it was sticking wide open, and I struggled to find a Bohanka specialist because they've all been sort of diverted and recruited to service the MOD Bohankas. Okay. I was like, oh no, I didn't expect that. Of course, Bohanka is so simple that any mechanic can really work on it. We did find someone eventually, but I thought that was an amusing, unexpected side effect.
I do have this image that any Russian farmer in those parts of Russia can put an old IS-3 tank to work.
Yeah, oh, sure. And I was only being lazy, really, because I could have spent the time to strip her down, but I just wanted to pay someone who knew what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, quickly,
so
for expedience.
You have more trust in the Russian mechanics now?
No. She's been to UAZ like three times and like had all these problems. And then I took her to an actual specialist in Moscow who just overhauled her. And he even said she was burning oil because there was a broken filler cap or something on somewhere. And I was like, what? After three visits to UAZ, they didn't notice that there was this broken cap. And like, maybe he was taking me for a long run just to take my money. But I was like, I can believe that. I can believe that UAZ was like, I'll be all right. It'll be fine. Just put more oil in.
Like a new car with problems of old car problems. I mean,
yeah. And again, this is I say brand new. She's not anymore. I put 25,000 kilometers on her in just 6 months or something. Again, this is stupid work for something that's not designed to do it, really. Not in that space of time.
Do people in Donbass hold hope for better days?
Yeah. There is the hope. Just keep in mind they've been through a lot, so they're under no illusions that it's going to end tomorrow. So whilst, yes, I'll say there's hope, there's also this realism that this is going to be hard and it's not going to be done easily or quickly. And there are it's almost worse in certain regards. Before, sure, it was still a proxy war, but not on this scale and not on this sort of brutality. And my last trip to the front lines, I embedded with an Orthodox Christian battalion, volunteer battalion. And it was one of those guys that opened my eyes a little bit. And I said, there are many similarities I see to the conflicts between Britain and Northern Ireland back in the struggles, as they were called when I was growing up. And he said, yeah. I said that one of the reasons for the brutality is this is both a civil and religious war. Oh. I was like, well, I'd not connected that dot between religion,
it's very not mentioned
apparent
in the media apart from the
no
apart and from only, the persecutions that
it only recently came to light when we saw the Kiev regime start to persecute the priests and seize the Orthodox churches and things like that, and that happened. I was like, I actually genuinely believe you there, because that was one of the aspects of the Northern Ireland conflict that was so bloody and so brutal.
Catholics versus
Protestants, and we see these Orthodox Christians and the Ukrainian Christians and stuff, and I thought, wow, that was a layer that I'd not really connected before, and it makes a lot of sense, and it really is brutal and bloody. It's horrible.
And now a more general broad question I would like to know your opinion about. Do you think the West is willing to bleed Ukraine dry of because if it
Absolutely,
because
yeah,
if it, if it's
absolutely.
if it keeps going at this rate, it's I mean I've no words. What will be of the future generations in what's left of Ukraine?
Well, we're having a generation annihilated
Annihilated,
now
yeah.
on the scales that we haven't seen since the world wars, and the commensurate sort of knock-on effects that that's going to have to Ukraine. Ukraine is expendable, of course, to the US interests, not just US, but let's say NATO and the collective West. And the sooner the Ukrainians wake up to that, the better, because no one, not even the people of Donbass, want that either. Due to their connections as well, and with these, with the now more rounds of mobilization, I do feel sympathy and sorrow for the guys getting rounded up off the street. A lot of talk is said about, NAZIs
Yes.
in Ukraine, and we know that not every one of them is far right, is of that
Yeah, of course. Not
persuasion
everyone.
or belief. So it's not fair to paint them with that brush, and label them all that way. So yeah, there is a lot of sadness and sorrow
But
that.
when you start to teach that in kindergarten,
Yeah, and this is the issue again. Scott Ritter's highlighted it, of this ideology that's been supplanted and implanted in there, that's rife. And what Putin has said, Russia is fighting against, and he's absolutely right. I've seen it with my own eyes. Again, not to say that everyone is of that persuasion, but it is in a significant part of the power structure and society that, like a cancer, it needs cutting out, and it needs to be cured and gotten rid of before any form of peace or progress can be deemed to have been made. And that's not an easy thing.
have you had the chance, or would you like to have the chance to interview an Ukrainian POW?
Yeah, I requested it last time, but my citizenship prevents me. Part of that is lessons learned, I think, with the coward and hypocrite Aidan
Oh,
Aslan.
I saw it. I saw the last post he made, or maybe one of the last posts he made, mocking.
Yeah, from Kherson.
From Kherson.
We've also seen it with Sean Pinner, who was who posted last I saw was an engagement back on the front lines. Then we've had other people. I won't name names yet, but there were Irish guys who fought for Donbass, one of whom has just served an 8-year prison sentence for fighting for the DPR. And my question is, well, what law were you prosecuted under? Is that not the same law that Aslin and Pinner should have gone to jail for? Well, and he said, well, yeah, I just fought for the wrong side,
I was
according to the
surprised.
British government.
I was surprised because I thought when they were convicted, that to the death sentence, I believe.
Yeah, there was a moratorium, though, on the death sentence at the time. But the complete disregard, disdain that they've shown towards that reprieve, for me, says volumes about them as people, really.
True.
But yeah,
I
that's
agree.
why I wasn't permitted to interview these POWs. It was deemed too politically sensitive. And I agree. I understand.
I saw the interview when Aidan Aslan was captured with Graham
There's Graham
Phillips.
Phillips, and even John Mark Dugan did one with him, where
Oh, I
Aidan
don't.
Aslan voluntarily sang the Russian national
Oh
anthem.
yeah, that I
Yeah.
saw. I
That
saw
was
images of that.
removed from YouTube. I believe
Okay.
Graham Phillips is was Graham Phillips is reinstated. There was something along these lines. It's really hard to keep track, but certainly from the DPR side, they don't want all that negative publicity again now. And those accusations of using prisoners of war for propaganda purposes and things, which again one has to understand. The answer is, though, yes, I would like to. I did request to. That being said, I have access to Russian citizens who are able to interview them, and I've subtitled a lot of Isabella Lieberman's interviews. She's a great journalist doing amazing work down there, where she's also trying to match up prisoners of war with family, so that because the Ukrainians put them just down as missing in action, whether they're dead or not, to refuse paying out the compensation required for the
They do not
families.
assume they're killed.
Yeah, everyone's just down as missing in action. So the families don't know if their husbands, brothers are alive or dead. So through her interviews, she's able to reach out sometimes to connect these people and send messages between them to loved ones, which, as you can imagine, is just invaluable. it's priceless beyond measure to be able. A lot of these wives, of course, are pregnant and expecting children as well. So, you know, to know that their father is safe for, you know, in Russian custody, and hopefully when this time comes to an end, the child will be able to see its father, is a huge relief. So yeah, there's definitely these humanitarian factors in there, and I'd love to be able to help myself, but I have to accept that and understand that the circumstances don't permit it.
By all the news that we keep hearing through mainstream media like CNN, although they admit some failures, but very lightly.
Yeah.
But by this time, with all the advances, Moscow should be besieged by this moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
One would wonder.
All the gains that
villages and all the incremental gains, now they're calling it.
Yeah. And again, we can joke about it, but the loss of life, even to reach the first line of defense, has been appalling.
But they keep on...
They've got this meeting in Vilnius upcoming, which they tried to use the alleged Russian coup as some form of display of whatever to try and justify funding Ukraine further for the money laundering operation they've got going on there, being paid for in Ukrainian blood. But yeah, it's just criminal.
So again, maybe yesterday,
as Ritter and Colonel McGregor have said, this is literally criminal what the West is doing.
Yes, I do agree. And at least the yesterday's events maybe gave them some off ramp, at least in speech wise, to do at this next forum, like claim some sort of victory or.
Unfortunately, the way it was resolved, no. Unfortunately, yeah. I think
ignore that part and hammer up the story.
they might try and say, look, there's sufficient lack of faith in Putin that warranted this to kick it off, but they're really grabbing at straws, and that's the main thing. They're desperate and they're grabbing at straws. It makes it dangerous. We've heard reports today of explosions at the Zaporozhye nuclear power plant. We've had the Kakhovka Dam, which is very clearly a Western operation to benefit Ukraine. It's very difficult to make the case that Russia, again, bombed itself caused itself so much calamity after Nord Stream and all the such like. The concern now is that in their desperation, they will now cause a provocation with the Zaporozhye nuclear power plant, specifically to have nuclear fallout affect a NATO country, to justify some next level of escalation.
Well, you had Lindsey Graham threatening, not menacing, confused the Portuguese, threatening if Russians do
as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If Russians do this kind of thing and attack this infrastructure and provoke this nuclear fallout, it gives us sufficient reason to. I mean, Lindsey Graham is profiting his best money.
Lindsey Graham is one of the most despicable human beings, I think. Yeah. One of walking this earth at this time with his warmongering and his words. I understand that. Yeah, that's absolutely. I've not seen that interview myself or seen those words, but I can absolutely believe that he would say such words.
One question is that I'm very curious about this. Do you miss the West? Do you miss your roots?
No. I do love my country, the UK, or at least the country of my birth. And I do want the best for it. I know that the elites and the leaders don't. Something that was a huge contrast from what I saw in Grozny, where I saw leadership that was investing in its people and its future for its furtherment and betterment, whereas I see the opposite in the UK. I know the same is happening in the US, where relatives of friends of mine are now saying that they're fighting in parking lots for spaces to sleep in their cars, often with children, that despite the news, the US is certainly in a recession, if not depression. So I don't miss anything from the West, because the West doesn't represent my values. And I'm talking specifically about the UK, but of course it applies for many countries.
Yeah.
It doesn't offer the life that I want. It doesn't offer the conditions I would want for my children. It doesn't offer me the prospects that I want for either of those lives. And it doesn't give me hope for certainly my personal or the collective future. And these are huge things, which I think contribute to the epidemic of depression that is rife in these countries.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm not even going to touch on the, you know, the rot that is set into society itself. Again, something that I witnessed in Grozny and Chechnya, that rot doesn't exist because they abide by these age-old tenements of society and living amongst each other, of these values and these codes. That doesn't mean that you have complete freedom, but maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should operate within parameters to have a healthy relationship with your neighbor. So maybe, yeah, you can't do certain things or say certain things or act in a certain way because it's not beneficial for society in general. And the West, the people of the West, I think, are understanding this now, that freedom on certain thing is good, but there do have to be rules. As we were taught as children, if we remember growing up, we wanted to do anything we wanted to do, but we understood the value and benefit of operating within a certain parameter. Rules. I'm not justifying censorship per se, but have the rules, state the rules, and clearly enforce the rules in a way that one can understand, not rules for thee and rules for me. We hated that when parents just said, just do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
We rebelled as that as children, yet we see that from the West.
Yes, yes. What would you say to a person that accused you of being, because I imagine that many do accuse you of being on a Russia's government payroll and being a pro foreign agent.
That's why I own it.
But what do you say if a person, not a person that just wants to attack you, but genuinely believes that you are that?
That's fine. They can believe whatever they like. Claire Daly, God bless her heart, she had the same accusation leveled to her in the European Parliament.
Yeah, she's great.
I think that was from the Polish representative saying, you know, how much money had you accepted from Putin? Yeah. She quite rightly was appalled by it. And she said it's kind of an ad hominem attack. You can't, if you can't argue with what's being said, just attack the person.
Attack the person,
yeah. And that's what happens. So it's water off a duck's back for me because I stand by my beliefs and the evidence that I present to support that. I mean, those kinds of people aren't usually worth listening to. And I resort to Mark Twain's quote where I don't argue with his idiots because they'll drag you down to their level and beat you with experience.
Yeah, so, it's like don't play chess with a pigeon. Because you will mess up the board, shit on it, and walk away.
Walk away
with a full chest.
And then the other aspect is we can agree to disagree. If you're happy with that society, by all means, participate in that one. But you know, I'm talking from the experience of having lived in both, so I can extol the virtues of one and the other. You know, against, because neither is perfect. But I can say which one I prefer and I can say why. And there are many people that support and believe me in that. That doesn't mean I have to be paid to say that. That's what I think people can't comprehend. 9 times out of 10, these are people who haven't had the benefit of my experience. They don't know what they're talking about. And that's fine. In which case, I'd say, well, you know, prove me wrong. Come and see for yourself. But that's too much action for a keyboard warrior. They just want to just shit talk anyone that they can because it's easy, and then they can delete and block you.
And
move on.
And likewise. Just like that. Yeah, I understand. Well, like I said, I will apply. Maybe in October, I will apply. I say maybe because it depends on my my holiday schedule from work, and I will apply for the visa. And I wanted to go with my young daughter, with my teenage daughter, but my wife doesn't like the idea of her tagging along in such trip.
Maybe not the first time then.
I will do like a recon trip and then come back and report it. And maybe
if you do, hit me up. So
I will for sure. I would love to have the chance to have this chat In presence. It's really, I must say that it's been a pleasure to talk to you. You are, I followed your channel, and I can see that you are, I have the perception that you are very sincere in the arguments you put forward and the way that you think. And I really respect that. And I hope we have the chance to talk more. I won't bother you now for some time because I know
no,
you.
No, dude, it's okay.
And I really wish you all the best. And I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't judge it wrong if you take a job in RT.
Thanks for saying that, because I have been agonizing. If only to sort of, in all truth and fairness. Someone commented the other day on, I think it was Podbean, where I did a podcast. I was experimenting with that platform. It looks very promising. Someone said, what qualifies you to talk about this? And, that's a good question. My response was, well, nothing really. It said, what qualifies you to be a journalist? I said, well, actually, that's a title others have given me. As I said, my channel was always, first of all, from gaming. So another reason I'm not sad that Isle Grey is dead, because it was a hangover from gaming days. But the reason I'm agonizing over working for an established international television company is actually to maybe, learn some skills that I could benefit from, be it in presentation, be it through investigation, whatever, even speaking on camera, perhaps, just to be better able to deliver that information. And then also in the hope that the current circumstances won't last forever, maybe in the future it can be carried on, extended maybe to China, other places where people are curious and the West seems to wish to block that. I'm struggling with staying independent and the benefits of working for people that have the experience and the means and the resources as well to get to places that as an independent, we've just talked about with Ukrainian POWs, perhaps with the backing of a major international TV network, that could be possible.
Possible, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
But the accounts I've heard from people that worked on RT is that they were never they were never held back from what they wanted to do.
Yeah, same. Yeah, there. This is, again, a myth. People think you're just the state's mouthpiece and you're very limited. I've heard the opposite, where RT are very accommodating and welcome initiative and welcome things like this. And the editorial team is not too dictatorial in what they promote and things like that. So there are a lot of good things I've heard, which just make it harder for me. Now, there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee that I'd be accepted and work for.
Okay.
But it's still an opportunity I think I would regret not exploring to the fullest. I'd be happy either way to be accepted or even to be declined, because that way I then know which path I'm going to walk.
I would be happy if you would go for it. Anyways.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people, your followers, you don't have anything to lose.
If I were to go ahead, I would look as YouTube as the stepping stone that gave me the means to be able to capitalize on such an opportunity. So, that's how the universe works.
Yeah.
In my experience. And I believe, I've mentioned him before, but Paulo Coelho, one of my favorite books is The Alchemist.
Yes.
And my
mother
philosophy.
Tried to recommend me that book many years ago. I haven't read it.
You have to. You should. I think everyone should, because it is a very powerful piece of literature that I've often recommended.
Okay, and we hope it doesn't get censored because you recommended it.
that's true. Interestingly, Coelho did a recent, I think his latest book was The Trans-Siberian Railway in Russia. Unfortunately, the review I heard was not positive. It was actually one of his worst, I was told. But I was also told he did it from Moscow to Vladivostok, let's say. He did it from the west to the east. And once he arrived, Putin wanted to meet him, so he had to fly all the way back to go and meet Putin.
I would fly to go if I have the chance.
I would as well, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I thought that was hilarious. You've just gone through all this epic journey and you have to go, whoop, go back again.
Okay, man. It's like I said, I will repeat. Just I have one last question the before we wrap this up. And do you think, honestly, have you traded? Because I can see, and you've stated that you like what you see in the society, in the Russian society, about values, and things seems to be in place according to your own values. But do you think you have traded some of the so-called Western liberty for those values, or do you feel the same liberties as you had in the West, adding?
Well, yeah, I have more freedom and opportunity here in Russia. I see basically the good things I guess I was born in 1985, so the late 80s, early 90s, I think, was maybe towards the end of probably the golden era, the heyday of the West. More so for the US than the UK. Britain was sort of more declining back then. We had the coal riots and stuff, but yeah, back then there was still this semblance of these values, and at least you could, it was the final days where, you know, there was the working man that could provide for his family, afford a house, a car, and holiday. Definitely towards the end in the UK, but I think still a potential opportunity in the US. Currently, these opportunities still exist in Russia, where you can survive on a married man's sort of income, of course, single man's income as well, but. Yeah, you can provide for a family. How long that lasts, I don't know. I see some worrying signs in the economy that I see more credit now being issued, mortgages for property, which is, you know, kind of a worrying
Let's
sign.
hope it doesn't follow the same model as we've
Yeah,
seen.
that's my concern. So again, for people, stop hanging about, get out of the decrepit West and try and capitalize on the opportunities that I won't even say just Russia, but the East still offers. And most of the East shares, you know, in BRICS countries, I would say, perhaps. That may be too broadly speaking, but for the most part, the BRICS countries offer. But certainly in the East, where you can perhaps live in the manner that you were brought up and accustomed to, that you just can't achieve in the West anymore.
Anymore.
And that's a fact I think most would agree with.
I've struggled myself too.
Yeah, I've lived it.
I've found a better job in oil and gas industry.
Yeah, don't
yes.
tell Greta Thunberg, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, we just sometimes we have groups of people that go and pro I just manifestations protests
Protest,
yeah pro climate protests. We just had a couple of months ago in my place of work we had the people blocking all the exits and entrances and
Well, they got nothing better to do, have they? So, clearly.
Okay, man. We're gonna wrap this up now again. Thank you
Been a
very much.
pleasure.
It was a
Enjoyed.
real pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
And of course, I will spread this video in as many as platforms as I can. And
Send me the link and I'll do what I can do as well.
yes,
So,
I will. And we keep in touch. And how do you say bye zi bye? I don't know what
Bye,
that means.
bye. Yeah.
Dasvidaniya.
That's with
And
Daniel.
yeah, I see you, man. Thank you. Let's see, end stream here. And stream here. We're still on the call.